My name's Butch Mazlin. I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. My sobriety date is September the 21st, 1989, and I am grateful for that. I want to thank Harlan for the invitation to be here and the committee for... I know you don't have any selfish alcoholics in Oregon, but in Canada, we have a lot of selfish alcoholics. And it's very easy for me to come to a function like this and enjoy a wonderful weekend and hear AA and Al-Anon talks and have a beautiful banquet and a dance and everything that goes on here, get my car and drive home and sometimes forget all the hard work that's been done on our behalf, because these things just don't happen. There's been people getting together all year long to plan this thing. There's been people giving up their weekend to sit out at registration and different things so that we could come here and enjoy this. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for your service. I have always been much more impressed by what I see you do rather than what I hear you say. I've always had the ability to sound better than I really am, including tonight. My friend said to me, "Is there something you'd like me to say about you?" I said, "Just make it up, because I'm going to." Anyway, it is good. I love coming to these things, and it's good to be here this weekend, come back and see some old friends, and a lot of the folks here I've known for a long time. Some of my closest and dearest friends in my life are here this weekend, and it has just been an incredible conference. I think Madeline mentioned it this morning. Your hospitality has been second to none. It is just a top-rated conference that you put on here. That's better. Now I can't see him at all. And it just has been a great experience up till now. It goes downhill from here, but it'll be picked up in the morning. You'll be okay. But it has been great, and I want to thank Madeline and Cliff for the great talks, and Lars Sr. just touched my heart every single time. Every single time. I got to clear, because I know there's some people here. I thought you might just do this for me, Lars Sr., but Lars Sr.'s not my wife. Now, I wouldn't mind if she was. But that's her husband, Butch, is there. They get that mixed up sometimes, don't they, Larsine? And just a beautiful, beautiful talk. You touch my heart, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the weekend, and it's just good to be here. Your 33rd, you know, it says in our book that if you're an alcoholic of my type, you'll get to a place where you can't imagine life with drinking, and you can't imagine life without drinking. And when you and I get to such a place, we'll know a loneliness such as few people know. And we have known that loneliness, haven't we? And yet here we sit this weekend and hear that laughter and love and everything that goes on in this room. We're absolutely blessed. And when you think about the lives that have been touched in 33 years of this thing being put on, because 33 years ago, a few people, guys and gals, got together and took an action. And this is the result of it 33 years later. I'm a strong believer in our book. I believe in the process of our 12 steps. I believe that is the answer for the alcoholic or the Al-Anon. But I sometimes think that we sometimes forget the power in fellowship. There is great power in fellowship. I have watched people come to events such as like this and leave their lives changed in a single weekend. I come to these things and I will leave here a different person than what came here. I love coming to these things. And it's interesting to me that when you come to these things and go to a lot of them, you'll very, very often see the same people. There's people who love this type of fellowship. It says in our book that God will show us how to create the fellowship that we crave. This is the fellowship I crave. I sometimes think we have a fellowship within a fellowship. And so I love to be here and be part of this thing. I'm attracted to longevity, long-time conferences, long-time members. I find something about longevity, consistency, attractive in our programs. My sponsor was an old-timer in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor came to Alcoholics Anonymous on July the 7th, 1958. And he was an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous until the day he died on June the 10th, 2004. And when I say active, I mean active. He went places. And one of the great joys of my AA life was is he took me places with him. Took me all over the place. Many of the people that I know today, that I'm close with today, I met with that old man. And I just loved it. I just loved it. And after I was sober for a little while and would have to get up to the front of one of these rooms, he knew how nervous I'd get before coming up here. And he'd sit beside me in the chair before my name was called, and he'd rub my back. Aww. They cry at Al-Anon when I do that. And he'd rub my back and he'd say, I know it doesn't feel like it, kid, but I'm with you every step of the way. And I'd get up the front of one of these rooms and look out, and there he'd be sound asleep in his chair. Kind of like my new friend here. Anyway, my home group is the Three Legacy Group, Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on Mondays and Thursday nights, Three Legacy Group. I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I used to say I belong to the best group in the world. I don't say that any longer. I find it arrogant of me. I belong to a strong group, Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a group guy. I believe in the home group. I believe the home group is the heartbeat of AA. And I belong to a group where all three legacies are in place, where it's not just about personal recovery, but where we work in unity. We work under the umbrella of our 12 traditions, our 12 concepts. I belong to a group that functions and operates together and believes in service as a group. That as our primary purpose as a group is to carry a message, not just to sit and talk about stuff. I belong to a group that has a committees that goes to a detox, and we make sure that the people from the detox are at our group every Monday and Thursday night. I belong to a group that goes into treatment centers and does things as a group, not just the same one or two individuals constantly doing everything. I belong to a group where sponsorship isn't something that's just talked about, but it is there, it is in place, and is made available to those new people when they come. I belong to a group, when you come to our home group, there'll be half a dozen people at that door to shake your hand and greet you and welcome you, because I'm a guy that believes that's probably the most important thing that we can do as a group, to be at that door when that new guy or new gal walk through that door for their very first meeting, because an in-depth version of step four doesn't mean a damn thing to them, but a warm handshake, welcome, come on in and sit down, have a coffee and sit with us, means a great, great deal. I belong to a group where there's enthusiasm. I believe enthusiasm. I believe enthusiasm is contagious. Don't you love when you go to your home group? Don't you love that chatter in the room? Don't you love it when we come in here, that chatter in here? Huh? It's just like being in a bar. It's beautiful. It's beautiful. Don't you love when you go to your home group and hear that? I know there's no such thing as a bad group, but there's some trying hard. We're trying hard. I love that enthusiasm in a room. I love it. Alcoholics, everybody talking, nobody listening. Alcoholics, I love them. Don't you love that? You try to talk to somebody at the meeting, 10 people stop and say, I don't mean to interrupt. Oh, yes, you do. I belong to a group that has structure. I belong to a group we know months in advance who's going to chair our meeting, who's going to talk there. We know that those new people, when they come from that detox, are going to hear a message of recovery. And we have all those things in place. And guys, I believe from the bottom of my heart that when a guy or gal walk into an environment where those things are in place, their chances of recovery become much, much greater than if they walk into a room where none of that's happening. So I believe in the home group, and I love my home group. I really, truly do. And it is good to be here in an environment where it's strong Alcoholics Anonymous and strong home groups are. I believe that's the future of Alcoholics Anonymous. So anyway, I forget when we started, but when I say that I'm happy to be here, I really and truly am happy to be here, because alcoholics don't always get where they're going. Drinking alcoholics seldom get where they're going. But sometimes even sober alcoholics don't get where they're going. I'm going to share a quick story with you and get on with this about that. But let me just tell you, there was a time in my life I was not allowed in the United States of America. Let me add, nor should I have been. They said, we have enough people like you here already. We don't need to import them. But I applied to the United States Department of Justice for a waiver that would allow me to come into your great country. I have it up home, right now. It's upstairs. It's in my bedroom, in the room. A beautiful piece of paper about that big has United States Department of Justice has my name on it. Allows me to come into the United States of America on humanitarian grounds. I don't even know what that means. The other thing, I don't know about any of you, but I from time to time can misplace things. So when I got that waiver, I made 25 photocopies just to be safe. And every time I come here, including this weekend, when I come here, I got to show them that, and we have a discussion, sometimes longer than others. And the other thing is, When I come here, they want to know where I'm going. They don't want to know I'm going to Oregon. They don't want to know I'm going to Seaside. They want to know exactly the address where I'm going. I don't know why they want to know, but they seem to want to know. So anyway, I'm going to a thing in Illinois one time, and I get up early in the morning. I like to get to the conference and be part of the convention I come here to be a part of. I don't come here to talk. I come here to be a part of the conference. I'm getting all my gear together. I can't find my waiver. I said to my wife, I said, Dee, where's my waiver? Like, it's her job to know where my waiver is. She said, I don't know. It's wherever you've put it. I said, no, it's not. You've lost it. She said to me, take one of those photocopies and get going. You're going to miss your flight. So I got that photocopy. I get all my gear. I go to Pearson International Airport. Please don't misunderstand what I'm going to say. Our Homeland Security, Border Patrol, custom agents do a wonderful job protecting our borders. God bless those men and women. But I think when they go to Border Patrol school, they teach them how not to smile. Serious people there. So anyway, I get all my gear and I go up to the line. It's a young guy. I give him all the stuff. He looks at the waiver. He says to me, what are you, a criminal? I said, well, perhaps you might have said that at one time. He says to me, he says, this is a photocopy. I said, yes, sir, the original's at home for safekeeping. Lies just fall out of my mouth. Just natural. Nah, I don't need to think about that. Just comes rapid fire. I need to think about truth, but lying just natural like that. He says to me, he says, you can't travel on a photocopy. He says, you have your I-94 form. I pulled out this form. He says, that's the wrong form. I thought, this isn't shaping up well. He says to me, he says, you go over there. He says, you got to fill out the proper form. He says, and you got to go see somebody about this photocopy because you cannot travel on a photocopy. I thought, I'm not going to Illinois today. But anyway, I go over and I fill out the right form, and I got one of those keen alcoholic minds that you only hear about from the alcoholics. You did not hear about that keen mind at the Al-Anon meeting, let me tell you. So anyway, I watch till his line's full and I see a more gentleman like Harlan. I go to his line. And I go there and I give him all the stuff and that. And he says to me, where are you going? I said, I'm going to Illinois. He says, what's your purpose of business? I said, I'm going to talk at a conference, Alcoholics Anonymous. He says to me, what address are you staying at? Oh, Jesus. I'd forgot to get the address. I said to him, I don't know. He looked at me, he said, you don't know where you're going. I said, that's correct, sir. I said, but somebody's going to pick me up and take me there. You're getting ahead of me. He says to me, who's picking you up? I said, I don't know. He says, let me get this straight. Somebody you don't know is picking you up, taking you somewhere you don't know where you're going. I said, yes, sir, that's correct. He said to me, what did you say your purpose of business was again? I said, I'm going to talk at a conference, Alcoholics Anonymous. He says to me, what are you going to talk about? And before I could answer him, he holds up his hands and says, hold it, let me guess. You don't know. So I'm happy to be here tonight. I was 25 years old and my wife had thrown me out of our home. And I want to tell you that I loved her as much as I was capable of loving, as much as I was capable of loving. I had a new address every night. I lived in the stairwells of apartment buildings in downtown Toronto. I just went from building to building. I had a new address each night. And at nighttime, I was under that stairwell. In the daytime, I was like a rat in a sewer, out in those streets looking to score, looking to scam, looking to rip somebody off to get the money I need to get to do what I need to do. I hear people in AA talk about AA luggage, matching green garbage bags. I didn't have any AA luggage. Had the clothes on my back. Still had an ultra suede jacket, though. Going to be cool at any expense. I'm 25 years old. I'm living in stairwells. I got the clothes on my back, and nobody wants anything more to do with me. And let me add right now, nor should they. Because alcoholics of my type are takers. I'm a user and I'm a taker. I use and I take from everybody I come in contact with. Now, it doesn't always appear that way because I want everybody to like me. I'm the guy in the bar buying the drinks for everybody, passing a bag of powder around, everybody's friend, good old Butch. The only reason I ever did anything for anyone was so you'd like me, not because I cared about you. I couldn't care less if you lived or died. Made no difference to me. I'm a taker. And let me tell you who I take from most, the people who love me. The people who love me, because they love me so much they can't stop trying. One more time, this time it's going to work. And they keep giving and giving, and I keep taking and taking, till eventually I break their hearts. And eventually the very people who love me got to push me away because they can't stand to watch it any longer. And that's where I am. I'm in the east end of Toronto one night. I'm all jacked up and nowhere to go. As I said, my wife and I owned a home in what they call the beaches down near the lakefront. We had a screened-in porch with a couple wicker couches on it. And I thought, I'm going to slip in there and get a couple hours and get out before she wakes up. Well, I pass out, and I wake up to one of these. And I opened my eyes and looked, and there was that little gal that I loved. And she looked at me with disgust and pity. And she said, Butch, you're a useless piece of scum, and you're never going to change. And if you cared anything about me at all, you get up and get out of here, and please don't ever come back because I can't stomach to look at you. And I got up and I left there, and it was a hot summer day, July, August, I don't know, but it's hot and humid, and I'm sick, and I'm hungover and heartsick. And I walk down what they call the boardwalk down on the lakefront, and I'm down there in that condition sitting on a park bench. And over where you guys are sitting, there was a park bench, and there was a little boy, 5 or 6 years old, sitting there eating a popsicle. And I looked over at that little boy, and you know what I thought to myself? Wish I had a dime for a popsicle. The big shot, the dope dealer, everybody's friend, good old Butch, sitting on a park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. Nobody wanting anything more to do with me. And here was the thought that I had that day, as clear as I'm thinking right now. I knew at that moment that that park bench and places like it was where I was going to go back to every single time. And I knew it beyond a shadow of a doubt. I've always been a hustler and a scammer and a talker. I knew I'd put a deal together. I'd come up with some cash. I always did. But I knew at that moment that that park bench or something just like it was where I was going to go back to, and I knew it. I was 25 years old. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33. I had 8 more years on those streets. And I will not bore you tonight with a horror story because I don't know that it would serve any purpose. You see, if you're an alcoholic like me, you already know. It never gets better. It always gets worse. And I had 8 more years on those streets. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 33, and I joined a group. And I got a sponsor. And I did the things you guys told me to do. Forget this suggested crap, the stuff you told me to do. You know where I was a number of years ago? Huh? I was in Rome, Italy. Ho-ho! Rome, Italy. Standing in the Sistine Chapel. Looking at the paintings of Michelangelo from hundreds of years before, my wife standing beside me, and the tears started to roll down my cheeks. And I thought of that guy sitting on the park bench wishing he had a dime for a popsicle. It's a long way from that park bench to the Sistine Chapel in Rome. It is a long way from the folks we've listened to here today to where they sit tonight. It is a long way from where you and I came from. Many of us here tonight, the dregs of society. Many of us here tonight, our own families didn't even want us around any longer. Yet here we sit this weekend, members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, living good, rich, full, productive lives. How do we get from where we sit tonight? How does that happen for you and I? Because it's not supposed to, but you know how it happens, don't you? And it only happens one way and only one way, and that is through the grace of God. Through a loving God that you introduced me to, through the Fellowship Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 Steps Alcoholics Anonymous, I will be forever grateful for what you've done for me in my life. I really and truly will. I started to drink at an early age. I hear people talk about dysfunctional families. Was my family dysfunctional? I have no idea. Let me just tell you, it wasn't the Cleaver residence in my home. There was lots of drinking in my home, lots of parties. Always on the weekend, there was a party. As a little boy, they'd let me play bartender. I could take them beers and take away the empties. They'd let me have swigs. They'd say, isn't he cute? And I loved that attention. So I started to drink when I was 4 years old. Now, I wasn't a daily drinker when I was 4. My allowance wouldn't allow it. I actively sought out alcohol, I don't know, 12 or 13 years old. I got a guy to go into a liquor store, get us a couple bottles of wine. I was going to be a wine connoisseur, 2 bottles of Old Sailor. And I think that's comparable to what you call Thunderbird in your country. And let me tell you, any wine I ever drank had a cap, not a cork. We drank that wine, got drunk, puked, and passed out, and that was the end of my social drinking, all downhill from there. I hear people in Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know if you have this in Oregon or not, but I hear people in AA meetings say things in these discussion meetings that they came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous was going to help them become a social drinker. You hear that? Came to Alcoholics Anonymous hoping Alcoholics Anonymous was going to help them become a social drinker. Let me tell you tonight, I didn't want to be a social drinker when I drank. I don't want to be a social drinker tonight. I don't particularly like social drinkers. I find them weird. Weird. You ever drink with a social drinker? Huh? Watch it. They let the ice melt in their glass. Sick drinking. Alcohol abuse. You ever drink with a social drinker? That's enough to make you puke, isn't it? You're having a few scoots. Would you like another one? Oh, no thanks. No. I'm starting to feel it. Oh, I thought that's when you put it in overdrive. Social drinker. My beautiful wife, D, my D's a, Stephen, I know my D real good. D's a social drinker. And this is a true story. Well, I hope my whole story is true, but this part is. I was at home a while ago. D was over in the kitchen. We have an open concept in her home. Steve's been there. And D's in the kitchen. She's got a bottle of wine on the counter. And I look over and she's got a funnel in the bottle of wine. I thought, what's she doing with that funnel? So I watched her. And then I see her, she goes, she takes a glass of wine, she starts pouring it in the funnel. I said to her, what are you doing? She says to me, I put too much in the glass. I said, don't you ever do that again. I'll divorce you. Social drinker. I'm a barroom drinker. I don't identify with closet alcoholics. Doesn't mean they're not alcoholic. You know those people that get the bottle, go in, lock the door, put on the country western music? I don't identify. I'm a barroom drinker. I love bars. I love them. I like opening the door to a bar. The smoke it billow out, the tinkle of glass, the smell of stale urine. I love it. I love it. I like neon. I like neon. I like neon when I was drinking. I still like neon. That's why I stay out of casinos. They're not good for guys like me. And I got to tell you, I thank God I never tried to get sober in the United States of America. I don't know if I'd have made it. God, I love to drink in your country. I love drinking here. You got many more here than we got in Canada. I call them juke joints. You know those divey, scuzzy little rat hole bars? You know, the neon sign says cocktails? Huh? You got a few around here. I saw them coming here. Oh, beautiful. Beautiful. I get fuzzy when I see them. I was going to an AA thing a number of years ago. I decided to drive in Pennsylvania. My wife was coming with me. I'm driving through this little town in the middle of nowhere. I'm driving down the main street. I hammer on the brakes to my car. I'm backing my car up. My wife said to me, Butch, what are you doing? I said, I got to see this again. And I'm telling you guys, there it was. This divey, scuzzy little rat hole joint had a neon sign. Said, stop for one, stay till one. Oh. Oh. If I'd have been drinking, I'd have had that tattooed on me. The work of art. Anyway, I'm not going to talk any more about my drinking tonight, other than to quickly share with you what drinking does for an alcoholic of my type. It is important that we talk about our drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope we got some new folks here for their first time at this convention. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. Welcome here. Welcome. I want to give you a little heads up, though, because you're going to hear some people come up to these podiums and say things like, I don't like drunkalogs. When you hear that, buckle up. Buckle up. You're about to listen to 50 minutes of drinking. Every time. It is important that we talk about our drinking in Alcoholics Anonymous for the purpose of identification. That is the greatest tool that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what makes Alcoholics Anonymous work. One alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous work for alcoholics and their programs work for other problems. We have to have identification. But I've come to believe in Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't matter if I'm drinking Dom Perignon or Aquashave. Doesn't matter if I'm drinking in the Fairmont Hotel or under a bridge in a box. It's what drinking does for me. And that's what I quickly want to share with you, particularly if you're new here tonight, what drinking does for an alcoholic like me. And the things I'm going to share with you, I did not know this at the time. I didn't know this when it was happening. I saw it in inventory. I saw it as you took me back through my life and helped me see my life honestly for the very first time ever. But as I look back today, I remember being a young boy in school, 10 years old, 11 years old, I don't know. And I'd be sitting out in that classroom, the teacher would be at the front of the room, and she'd ask a question. And she'd start looking around that room to see who she was going to ask to answer that question. And my head would go down like this. Oh, Jesus, don't let her ask me. Because I knew if she made eye contact with me, she's going to ask me to answer the question, and I don't want to answer the question. Doesn't even matter if I know the answer to the question, I don't want to answer the question. When I went to school, we used to have to do book report, get up in front of a whole classroom full of kids. No good. No. I get up in the morning, I'd say, Ma, I've been puking all night. I'm sick. I can't go to school today, Ma. Please don't make me go. Because I want to tell you something. I would be absolutely terrified, terrified at the thought of getting up in front of that classroom full of kids. Every decision I ever made in my life was based on fear. Most of it unfounded and ungrounded, but fear. Where I go, what I do, who I hang out with, how I dress, how I talk, all based on a comfort level. I don't know about any of you guys, but I every now and then would get goofy. I go on about a five-day bender. I come home on a Sunday after being gone for 5 days. My wife would be there. I come in that house. I'd say, sweetheart, that's it. No more. No more. I know I said it last week, but this time I swear in my Ma's life, I'm never having another drink of whiskey as long as I live. I promise you. That's Sunday. I'd wake up Monday. I'd think to myself, I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have said that. I'd have to go to a wedding that following Saturday. You ever go to a wedding sober? That's a bad deal. That is a bad, bad deal. I would be at that church sweating, thinking about the reception that's going to start in 3 hours. I'm back at that reception, and I don't have anything in me, and that dance is going to start. And I'm going to tell you something. My hands are sweaty. I got a knot in the pit of my gut. I feel awkward and out of place, and it is horrible. And I have to do one of two things. I got to get over to that bar and get a couple drinks into me, or I got to get out of there because I can't stand the way I feel. Every decision I make is based on that fear. You want to know what kills an alcoholic like me? I don't even know I'm afraid. I think I'm afraid of nothing, and I'm afraid of everything, and I don't even know it. We talk an awful lot in these topic meetings. Let's discuss resentments tonight. I prefer to call it hate. Hate. I know you're not that sick in Oregon, but hate. I am the type of alcoholic that's driving my car. I'm at a red light and I'm on the nod by now, and that light would turn green and the guy behind me lays on his horn. Whoa. I almost go through the roof of my car. I want to get out of there, go back there, open the door, drag him out by his throat, take a crowbar and crack his skull open. I know some of you spiritual giants never thought that, but I do. I'm not talking anger management here. I'm talking rage. I'm talking a white rage. I'm talking a rage that I don't have 10 minutes before and I don't have 10 minutes after. But I have a rage inside of me that comes out every now and then, and I can't control it. And I say things or do things to people I never wanted to say or do. And let me tell you who takes the brunt of my anger. It happens behind closed doors. The people who love me take the brunt of my anger. You see, I'm a guy who's constantly seeking. I need your approval. I need your approval more than I ever needed a vodka. Vodka helped me think to get your approval. But I'm constantly seeking your approval so you don't display that rage there. You keep it for behind closed doors. Lonely. I'm 25 years old. I'm standing at a subway platform in downtown Toronto on a Friday night, all jacked up, and a train pulled up, and the doors opened, and a young couple my age got off that train, walked off into the night laughing and smiling. And I saw that couple, and God, I felt sad. I thought, why can't I be like those people? I remember walking through a nice residential area on a warm summer's night, a nice August night, and it's just getting dark and a warm breeze, and I'd walk down the street, and I'd see the nice homes. And I'd see the television on inside and the families in there, and I feel like crying. Why can't I just have a nice home and a family like other people? Why is all the crap got to keep happening in my life time and time again? From as long as I can ever remember, I was restless, irritable, and discontented. If I was at this bar, I'd say, guys, drink up, let's go over to the other bar. If we're at this party, I'd say, guys, drink up, we're going down to that party. If I'm married to you, I should be married to her. Never quite right. And I don't know about you, but I get one of those double vodkas or whatever I'm doing that day. It was like this. I don't know if you remember that or not. Here, I'll give you one more. Here. I did that in a meeting one night. Two guys get up and left. You should see when I do that at detox. They're on the ceiling. It's beautiful. But let me tell you something. I have three or four of those double vodkas, and I walk into that wedding like I own the joint. And I am moving and grooving. And I'm talking to the ladies, and I'm sitting with my buddies, and we're drinking and snorting and carrying on. And at that moment, everything in my life is absolutely perfect. And my perception of reality changes. Same wedding, same hall, same music, same people, same food, same everything. But you put four vodkas in me, and that whole place changes. And I get an immediate sense of ease and comfort. And that is why I drink whiskey, because I like the effects produced by it. But I am an alcoholic. Something happens to me that only happens to one out of every 10 people that drink it, called a phenomenon of craving. And I'd start drinking, and I couldn't seem to stop, and I'd end up drinking 60 ounces of vodka, and I'd smash up my car. I'd go out after work for a few beers with my buddies. I'd end up going on a 5-day bender. I'd get fired from my job. I tell my wife I'm going out for a loaf of bread. I run into Steve. I come home 3 months later. My wife's leaving. I'm out there drinking, partying, carrying on. I don't want to stop. I got no money, so I'm stealing yours, and now I go to jail. And what everybody focused on in my life was the crashed cars, the broken marriages, lost jobs, going to jails. We looked at drinking. We never looked at alcoholism. And people told me from the time I was 18 years old, Butch, if you just quit drinking whiskey and sticking needles in your arms, you'd be all right. And there are times I wasn't drinking whiskey or sticking needles in my arms, and guess what? I wasn't all right. As a matter of fact, I'm crazier sober than I ever was when I drank. But all those well-meaning people could see was that when I drank, the trouble that followed. So naturally, they said, stop drinking. But those well-meaning people didn't understand how I feel when I'm sober. How could they know? I didn't know. I'd love to stand up here tonight, tell you, I woke up one morning, HFC Finance was dying to lend me money, work was sinking and promoting me, and my wife was sending me flowers. And I thought, I think I'll join AA today. Huh? Every now and then I hear some idiot say, if you're not here for the right reasons, you might as well drink. Every now and then I'd like to get that tire iron back out. The right reasons? Did you come to Alcoholics Anonymous for the right reasons? I come to Alcoholics Anonymous because I had nowhere else to go. One more time, my boss called me into work on a Tuesday. He said, Butch, you're a hard worker. I said, well, thank you. He said, but you're not here much. Picky, picky. He said, you think you might have a problem with alcohol? I said, no, but I know what the problem is. He said, maybe you'd share that with me. I said, it's my health. He said, really? I said, yes. Now, granted, my poor health may have something to do with my drinking. I'm going to quit drinking. My health's going to get better. Everyone's going to be okay. He said, you think you might need some help quitting drinking? I said, no, I'm just going to quit. Got up and left his office. Was to find out later his wife had been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for many years. Can you imagine the chuckle he had as I left? Huh? He's just going to quit. That was Tuesday. I woke up Thursday in another hotel room in another town drunk. I didn't keep him waiting long. And for whatever the morning, that reason, I knew the jig was up. I'd used all the lies. Alcoholics are liars. I don't know what that's about. I will lie when the truth will serve me better. I am a pathological liar. I'm the type of alcoholic that goes out and plays golf all by himself and cheats on the scorecard. I do. That's not the best part. At the end, I look at the card and go, good game. Butch, good game. So I'd used all the lies. I know I got to come up with something good this time. I had a few tequilas. I turned my mind to it. I thought, I know what I'll tell them. I'm alcoholic and I'm going to go to AA. And that's how I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And for anybody here tonight who's new, we couldn't care less why you're here. We couldn't care less. We're just glad to see you. And maybe, just maybe by the grace of God, something someone will say, something you'll hear, something you'll read, something will happen, and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous or Al-Anon can happen in your life, and you can go on to live a rich and happy life like so many men and women here have been able to do. Just keep coming. And as I said in the beginning, I've been a blessed man since the day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous. Blessed man. September 21st, 1989, two men came to my mother's house practicing Alcoholics Anonymous in its purest form. In its purest form. They did not come to my mother's house and talk to me about my drinking. They had no axes to grind, no lectures to endure. They came to my mother's house and talked to me about their drinking and what had happened in their lives since they came to something called Alcoholics Anonymous. And would I like to go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous with them? I was a hopeless, helpless, chronic alcoholic. I had been running the street since I was 13 years old. And those two men came to my mother's house, took me to my first meeting, Alcoholics Anonymous, that night, and I've been with you ever since that first meeting. I don't know what to tell you about that other than I'm extremely grateful for that opportunity, because that's not everybody's experience. A lot of people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, and come back to AA. Some people come to Alcoholics Anonymous, return to drinking, never come back to AA. So I'm very, very grateful for that experience, and I've been a blessed man since the day I come here. Deep, deep love in my heart for the old-timers. Deep, deep love. Men and women who've been coming for 30 and 40 and 53 years, who've made sacrifices and commitments to Alcoholics Anonymous, Al-Anon, so it would be here for people like you and I. I love them from the very bottom of my heart. And if you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous, I would urge you to get close to these men and women and learn from their experience, because we won't have them with us forever. And I had some giants come into my... I've heard people in Alcoholics Anonymous say you should never put people on pedestals. Well, you do what you need to do. But let me tell you something, I have some people on pedestals, giants in our programs, number of them right here in this room tonight. Never for a moment have I lost sight of their humanities. The greatest gift my sponsor gave me, the greatest gift the old man ever gave me, it wasn't some wisdom he pulled out of the book, some divine spiritual peace he laid on me. The greatest gift my sponsor ever gave me was he allowed me to see his warts. He allowed me to see him get afraid. He allowed me to see him get angry. He allowed me to see him get selfish. Allowed me to see him get lustful. Allowed me to see all of him. Because if he hadn't, and you don't continue to, I will never measure up. We are much more brothers and sisters in our defects than we are in our virtues, aren't we? And I had some wonderful people come into my life, none more than mine. I've heard people say if you like your sponsor, you have the wrong sponsor. I hear that and I know I'm listening to an idiot. Idiot. I didn't like my sponsor. I loved him and I love my sponsor today. You see, you were the very first people who helped me understand what my problem was. Because when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a clue. Not a clue. I'd been told what my problem was. A lot of people, my wife told me what my problem was. My parents, judges told me, please. I'd heard since I was 18 years old. Butch, just quit drinking. You'll be okay. You were the first people that said, kid, drinking's not your problem. It's your solution. How I feel when I'm sober is my problem. You see, an alcoholic of my type, not drinking and not treating alcoholism, and sitting in AA meetings does not treat alcoholism. That's the great myth that kills many, many alcoholics. The meetings are where the solution is. The meetings are where the fellowship is. The 12 steps Alcoholics Anonymous treat alcoholism. And an alcoholic of my type, not drinking and not treating alcoholism, will get so restless, irritable, and discontent sober that I have to do one of two things. I don't have a choice. I have lost the power and choice. I have to drink again. That's what makes me alcoholic. That is the difference between me and the hard drinker. I've lost the power and choice. So not drinking and not treating my illness, I have to do one of two things eventually. Drink again or blow my brains out. Most of us drink again, but we all know someone who's paid the supreme price, don't we? Didn't have a clue. You told me that selfishness and self-centeredness was the root of my troubles. I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous and do an inventory and go, my, you haven't been a very nice boy. I didn't need to do an inventory to know I was a lying, cheating thief. But I had no idea of how self-centeredness looks in my life. I had no idea about the bondage of self. I didn't have a clue how that looks in my life. As a matter of fact, if you'd have asked me the day I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, Butch, what kind of a guy are you? You know what I'd have said to you? I'm a good guy. I'm a fine man. And you could have hooked me up to a lie detector test and asked me that question, and that needle would not budge, because I believed that. Let me tell you why I believed it. You see, I always judged myself by my intentions. You see, my intentions were always good. Unfortunately, the world judges us by our actions, and my actions and intentions never lined up. Selfishness and self-centered, the root of my troubles. And from that selfishness and self-centered comes 100 forms of fear and all my resentments, but all based in self. And you told me that I had to be rid of it or else it would kill me. And it seems there's no way of doing it without God's help. Didn't have a clue. Didn't have a clue. And you gave me, you started me on a basic foundation. I thank God for the foundation that you gave me and have given me in Alcoholics Anonymous that has served me well over this time. You taught me what it meant to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I know it says in our traditions you're a member when you say a member, and I'm a guy who believes in our traditions. Our traditions are as much a part of my life. There is as much a deflation of ego as our steps are. But for me, I'm not a member just because I say I'm a member. To be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous means there's some conditions to be done. You taught me what it meant to be a member of a home group, an active participating member. You encouraged me to be an informed member of Alcoholics Anonymous, so that in my business meeting, I don't just put up my hand because Cliff puts up his hand, but an informed member of Alcoholics Anonymous. You encouraged me to start to read and understand our traditions. You encouraged me to start to read our history of where we came from. Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers, pass it on. AA comes of age. You said, if you're going to spend your life in Alcoholics Anonymous, would you not like to know where we came from? Would you not like to know what was done on your behalf so we could sit here and enjoy this beautiful weekend this weekend? And you started to give me that foundation. And you told me Alcoholics Anonymous was a program of action. It's about doing. And the actions start small and they start to grow, but it's about change. You told me that I was selfish and self-centered and we're going to start with little changes. You taught me things like, we want you to go to the meeting early, go to the washroom, get your coffee, sit down and be quiet. Maybe you don't want to listen to what's going on in that meeting, Butch, but maybe those people sitting there would like to. And for once in your life, why don't you think of someone else other than yourself? Oh, it was true. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a sewer for a mouth. I'd been running those streets since I was a kid. And you took me aside after the meeting. Nobody, I couldn't say a full sentence without four-letter words in it. But nobody embarrassed me in an AA meeting. Nobody humiliated me. But you took me aside after with love and kindness. And you said, this isn't some juke joint bar room you're sitting in now. This is a classy organization, a ladies and gentlemen. And we don't talk that way here, Butch. Maybe that doesn't bother you, but maybe it bothers that gentleman sitting there. And for once in your life, why don't you think of someone else other than yourself? Oh, it was true. And the changes started small, and they started to grow. And I thank God I'm the product of strong sponsorship, and I believe in strong sponsorship. And I'm a guy that believes that without strong sponsorship, our chances of recovery become almost nil. Almost nil. I thank God that I didn't hear some of this quick lip crap that I hear in AA. Oh, just don't drink and go to the meetings. You'll be okay. Huh? Isn't that a nice little out for me now that my life's better? I can sit at home on a Friday night and watch my flat screen TV. No, no. The people who came into my life said, you have a lot more wrong with you than drinking, kid. You come with us. We're going to show you what's wrong and we're going to show you what you need to do to get well. I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for the direction you've given me and helped me through this process, because I cannot do it. One of the greatest disservices we do to new people is give them a book and say, here, go do this. And we kill them. You see, I suffer from a disease of perception. I, at times, cannot differentiate from the truth from the false, drunk or sober. Drunk or sober. I need your direction. I need your guidance. Correct me if I'm wrong. I know you'll be only too happy to. But I believe it says in step 10 that by now, sanity will have returned. I think that infers that up until that point, I'm operating from an insane position. I need your direction. I need your guidance. And I thank God you took me through that process, took me through that inventory. I got to talk fast. I can't remember when we started. You'll let me know, I'm sure. But you took me through that process. You took me through the amends process. It was an incredible freeing thing for a guy like me that was totally bound up in self all his life. I don't know about any of you. I'm going to tell you something my entire life. You know, they had the kids at school that did well in school and belonged to the teams and the clubs. I hated their guts. I hated those kids. Huh? You want to know why? I didn't know then. I know why now. I didn't feel as good as those kids was the truth. And then they had the kids behind the school were starting to smoke and drink and cutting up. That's where I hung out because I felt a little sharper than most of those kids. But my entire life, every person I ever met, my entire life coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, for a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous, and if I'm not in fit spiritual condition today in Alcoholics Anonymous, the first thing that I do when I meet someone is size myself up. And every single time, I'm either better than or less than, but never the same as. Never the same. And that amend process got me free, got me right with the world. Today that I can look you in the eye and I can just be one of many, just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, just one of God's kids, no better than and no less than. That is a freeing experience for a guy who spent his entire life seeking your approval in one form or fashion and never even realized I was doing it. Incredible thing. And sometimes the longer I'm here, I'm going to tell you, I've listened to people debate in a meeting for 45 minutes whether they were recovered or recovering. Smoke starts coming out my ears. Our book is very, very clear on that. But I thank God where you show me in the book where it says that what we have is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of my spiritual condition, that I am not cured of alcoholism, not cured. I have a daily reprieve from that. And I want to share with you that sometimes the longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, I know this wouldn't happen to you, but sometimes the longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, the harder it is for me to be truthful with you. Sometimes the longer I'm here, the harder it is for me to come to you and tell you I'm dying inside and I don't know what to do. Because I've been sober for a while. I'm an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous and I want you to think I have it all together. Sometimes the longer I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, the easier it is for me to become critical and judgmental. I know you wouldn't do that, but I can. It is easy to let up in the spiritual program of action and to rest on our laurels. Sometimes the beautiful gifts that we get from sobriety, if we're not careful, can be our greatest enemies. It is easy to let up. You see, I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to be a GSR. I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to go to a detox. I cannot stay spiritually fit today because I used to make coffee at my home group. I cannot stay spiritually fit because I used to work with a lot of new people. I stay spiritually fit today by the actions that I take today. And I want to tell you that I am more in the center and more active in Alcoholics Anonymous than I ever been. And I've been active since day one because I have a lot more to lose today, 25 years later, than I did the day I walked through that door. You sure want to believe that. And I stay close to you people. Close to you people. You know when we started? You good? And you introduced me, the greatest, you introduced me to a loving God. You know, Chuck Chamberlain used to say that we have one problem and only one problem. And from that one problem comes all other problems. And that one problem is a conscious separation from God. That is our problem. If you'd asked me when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous, do you believe in God? I would have said to you, yes, I do. Yes, I do. It had as much meaning in my life as the price of coffee beans in Brazil today, but I wasn't a disbeliever. And God was way up there in heaven, way up there. He had long hair and a big beard and a big stick. Charlton Heston, right? And if you were good, good things happened. And if you were bad, bad things happened. Huh? Well, if God's way up there and I'm down here, have you ever heard more of a conscious separation in your life? You were the very first people that said to me, kid, deep down inside of every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. And it seems in the final analysis, it is only there that he can be found. And the great reality for us is that our Creator has entered our hearts and lives in a way that is indeed miraculous. The great reality for me today is just that. You introduced me to that. Listening to your stories, watching the things you did, taking me through this process, introduced me to a power that is real, that has become experience. There is a very big difference in believing God and being connected to power. Very, very big difference. And you got me to something that is real, and it is the great reality of my life. I find it interesting sometimes We talk about that spiritual experience, that spiritual awakening. We're always very familiar with Bill's white light experience and stuff. We talk about, I didn't have anything like Bill had, though, with that white light experience. I don't know this, if it's true or not, but I know Bill was an alcoholic. And I sometimes wonder, the more he told the story, the brighter that light didn't get. It was as though the room lit up. It felt as if a warm breeze. Bill was a wordsmith. I don't know that it's any different, and I know many of you in this room know exactly what I'm talking about, and if you don't, please stay here, because you will if you stay and take these actions. But you know that time when one day you're sitting in a meeting, or one day I'm driving in my car, I'm driving down that road to the airport, I stick a little Lynyrd Skynyrd Freebird in there, huh? And I'm driving down that road, and my eyes fill up with tears. And those tears start to pour down my face. And I know that there is a living, loving God. And it now becomes experience. It becomes real. And we get that brief moment of the great reality of God Himself. You've done that for me. You've given me that. And I think at that point that this program starts to shift, and I stop looking at me and start looking at you. And I start to towards that real purpose to be of maximum service to God and those about us. That's what this process has been doing. It's been arming me with facts about myself so that I can then go out and be of maximum service to God and His kids. Incredible gift that you've given us. And the great paradox to all this stuff, you know, if we want to keep it, we got to give it away. Nothing ensures us immunity from drinking like intensive work with other alcoholics. When all else fails, this works. The occasional good deed is not enough. Our very lives as ex-problem drinkers depends upon our constant thought of others. Unless I continue to enlarge and perfect my spiritual life through unselfish acts and helping others, I will surely drink when I hit those certain low spots. If you are new to Alcoholics Anonymous and you're blessed to come here and stay sober and are sober 3 or 5 years and everything's been going good in your life, buckle up. Buckle up. Life will happen. Life will happen. Huh? And you introduced me. We've been blessed, haven't we? You've heard the people all weekend. You will continue to hear it all weekend. We could go here anywhere tonight or anywhere in the world and ask the people in AA and Al-Anon, how's your life since coming here? You know the answers we'd hear. The greatest thing in our life, just the best thing ever happened to me. It's my whole life. As if we hadn't been given enough, you and I are then given the ability to change people's lives. That's not an ego statement. That is a statement of gratitude, a statement of humility. You and I, when armed with facts about ourselves, are able to make the difference in a few short hours when nobody else was able to. And until such an understanding happens, little or nothing can be done for the alcoholic. We have been uniquely gifted to help others. Incredible gift. Incredible gift. It says in our book that alcoholics laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. I don't know if you do this here or not, but at home when you celebrate your birthday, your 5-year birthday, or your 1-year, your 10-year, you get to pick the speaker and the players in the meeting and stuff, and maybe some family members come, some people from work maybe come. Never been to AA before, don't know anything about AA. You ever wondered that some of those people might be thinking some monkey like me gets to the front of the room and says things like, yes, I bought a brand new Cadillac. I picked it up at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning and totaled it at 10. We laugh. Larcine's dragging Butch across the concrete with his head split open. We laugh. I got a buddy from California talks about spilling the bottle of whiskey in his bed and then sucking it out of the sheets. You ever wonder what those visitors might be thinking? Says we laugh at sometimes seemingly tragic situations. No, it says after that, why shouldn't we? Why shouldn't we? Because we have recovered. We've recovered and been given the power to help others. God's power, not my power. God's power. My life. Do we have 5 minutes? My life before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous had absolutely no meaning or no purpose. I don't know what your life was like. It's none of my business, but mine had none. I was either drunk, planning on getting drunk, recovering from being drunk. In trouble, trying to get out of trouble, planning on more trouble. I work all week so I can drink all weekend. I deal so I can do. And everybody in my life's the same. Alkies don't hang out with social drinkers. No meaning, no purpose in my life whatsoever. I go to a detox at home, not because I'm some saint, I'm some wonderful person. It's the way I've been taught. But anyway, I go there. We have a big speaker meeting on Sunday mornings. There are a couple hundred people, and I like to take the new people to speaker meetings so they can listen. I happen to think it's good for new people to listen. I know it's not that fashionable today, but I happen to think it's good. Anyway, I go there. I go in. There's a guy in there, and he's in bad shape. I'm not talking detox, hungover. I'm talking physically bad shape. I thought, this guy might die. He might not make it. Well, I figured to myself, he could die at the meeting as easy as he can die here. I mean, dying's dying. You got to do it somewhere. Let's go. We went to the meeting. After the meeting, we spent a couple hours talking about this design for living, this practical program of action. And I left him. I never saw him again. I'm sitting in a meeting one day. I see some guy coming across the hall. I could see he's coming to me. Clean-cut looking guy. Had a shirt, pair of slacks on. Come walking up. He said, Butch, you probably don't remember me. I said, I'm sorry. I can't say that I do, but I meet a lot of people. He says, my name's Ziggy. I said, holy smokes. That's not really what I said. That's what I'm saying here. He said, you remember me? I said, oh, I remember you. It's the guy, and he's looking good. He said, Butch, I just wanted to thank you for taking me to that meeting that morning. I haven't had a drink since that day. It's almost been a year. I said, congratulations. He said, I was wondering if I can ask a favor of you. I said, if I can do it, I will. He said, will you come and talk at my one-year AA birthday? I said, I'd be honored to do that, Ziggy. I went and talked at a group a handful of years ago. I got up to a room, not this big, but big room full of people, and I started crying. I couldn't get going, Edith. And I'll tell you why. I looked out, and there sitting at the front table in a suit and tie, looking like $1 million, with his wife and all his children, was Ziggy. And he was getting his 15-year medallion. Took him to his first meeting, talked at his 1 year, talked at his 5 year, talked at his 10 year, talked at his 15 year. You know where I was last summer? Ziggy's 20. You think my life doesn't have meaning? You think my life doesn't have purpose? My life is so rich. My life is so good. I could stand up here for the next 2 hours. I'd be all alone, but I could do it. I could do it. Talking to you about the things that have come into my life since I came to this program and did the one thing that we have to do. The one thing. Don't you love when we read it, how it works? The greatest piece of literature ever written. Greatest for a guy like me, anyway. Huh? But don't you love at the end of the steps it goes, ho, whoa, what an order. I can't go through with it. Huh? Don't you love what it says after that? Don't worry. Don't worry. I can't. Cliff can't. Huh? Madeline can't. Bill couldn't. Bob couldn't. Says, as a matter of fact, none of us is able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. The point is we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. But the one thing that I have to do here is that first step, 100%. That I admit to my innermost self, that I am alcoholic. Innermost self. I can go to any detox, any treatment center, anywhere in the world tonight and say to those guys and gals, you powerless over alcohol? Oh, yes, sir, I am. They all know it here. I need to know it here. I need to know in the depth of my soul that my life depends on this program and you people. The depth of my soul. The depth of my soul that I believe in that. Everything that I have in my life, I believe that first step is about surrender. That's what I believe. I'm done. I'm finished. No more tough guy. No more big shot. No more Mr. Know-it-all. I'm done. I don't want to live this way anymore. I want to live the way you guys are living. Will you please help me? Will you please help me? And I become willing to do whatever it is you tell me I have to do. I don't need to like it. I don't need to agree with it. I don't need to think it's good for me. I just need to do it. And when I do that, I'm starting to walk in the sunshine. Everything in my life that is good is because of you. I'm going to share 1.5 quick stories. 1.5 quick ones. Steve and Connie know him. My wife's at home. I love that. That's... Anyway, we have a good life. Steve, we have a good life. Good life. And everything that I have is because of you and this program. and that, just everything. I'm going to share this story with you. I like watching the golf. Huh? We've been talking all week, haven't we, Tracy, about the golf. And I like to watch it more than play it. It's easier. But anyway, I love watching it, and I like watching on Sundays, the final day, and particularly if the last pairing, the guy's in there, and he's leading by a few shots and coming up that 18th. Well, I was watching the Masters one year, and Phil Mickelson was leading, and he was coming up that 18th fairway. His wife had breast cancer and was going through cancer treatment, and Phil Mickelson's walking up that 18th fairway, and they put the camera on him, and his eyes were filled up with tears. It took everything he had to keep it together to get up there. And then they flashed to his wife, I think her name's Amy, beautiful blonde lady with her two little daughters, and you could see the tears coming down her eyes. And I'm watching this, Steve, and I'm crying. And Dee's with me, and I turn, I look at Dee. I said, Dee, I said, can you imagine how proud she must be of him as he walks up there? My wife didn't miss a beat. She turned and looked at me, and she said, I know exactly how she feels. She said, I feel that way every time I see you at the front of one of those rooms. Every time I see you upstairs with that new guy. She said, Butch, that's a game. A wonderful game, but a game. This is people's lives we get to be a part of. You've done that for me. You've done that. I'm going to share the half story and we're done. And I share this for you for a reason that I know that there's some new people here tonight. I know, I remember brand new. I know you're thinking 25 years, that just is so. It feels, I swear to you, I wouldn't lie to you. It's like that. It's gone like that. And I remember be there. And I know you sit there and you see us come up here with nice suits and ties and dresses on. And we've been sober for a long time and we're living a good life and all that. Trust me, we don't mean to wear any false face here. What we talk about are ideals that we strive towards. But I'll tell you, we all have problems. It says in the 12 and 12 that when self-examination, prayer, and meditation taken individually produce a good result. But when logically interwoven, give us an unshakable foundation for life. An unshakable foundation for life. Our granddaughter, Sarah, was diagnosed with leukemia 2 years ago. She spent 5 months in children's hospital, and she had chemotherapy, and she went into remission, and she came home. And 6 months later, the cancer came back. And she went back, and they said, we're going to give her the strongest radiation, the strongest chemo, and she has to have a bone marrow transplant. She has a 30% chance to live. I had many of my friends in this room that prayed for us, just unbelievable. And anyway, they did the stuff, and we didn't have a perfect bone marrow match, and they did a stem cell transplant from our daughter. It worked wonderful. The doctors couldn't believe how well. They were talking around the world about it. It was just wonderful. And our granddaughter came home. And on June 24th this year, the cancer came back. And they said, there's no more treatment. There's no more treatment. And we can't do anything. And she has months to live. And on November 2nd this year, we buried our 7-year-old granddaughter. And Steve met our granddaughter at my 25th birthday and stuff, and it's just a horrible loss. It is a horrible loss. We miss her deeply. But you see something? We have an unshakable foundation for life. An unshakable foundation for life. Life continues to happen. I thank God in that book, that line that serves me so well, where it says, none of us is able to fully define nor comprehend this power we call God. It takes away the debate. Why? I don't know why. It's not for me to know. But it also says in the book that we're going to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, and the hereafter. I have no doubt that Sarah is in a place beyond anything you and I can even imagine. Our son is a high school teacher, and when that happened, Sarah needed a blood transfusion every week and was going to need bone marrow, and he started a drive for blood and bone marrow. And all the kids in the school, because they're the best people, they came. They had to start turning people away, and the newspaper found out about this. And Sarah has a website that 500,000 people, Steve and Connie know it good, and that and stuff. And they started these, and all the other schools got involved. And we had more bone marrow drives and blood than they'd ever had. And they followed Sarah all through this thing. And up to today, there's been 5 children who've had successful bone marrow transplants and are okay because of Sarah. This is what I know, that God spins everything into gold. What we think is so bad because we can't understand, but God takes care of everything. Everything, everything, everything. I want to thank the committee for asking me to be here and you guys for your kindness and patience. You know, I don't know what's going to happen from here on in, and none of us know for sure, do we? You see, just because we become members of Alcoholics Anonymous and Al-Anon, life doesn't stop happening. People die. Relationships end. Businesses fail. People get sick. Life goes on. But I'll tell you something. Every single morning for many, many years now, including first thing this morning, I say to my friend upstairs, first thing, I say, if you see fit, I sure would appreciate it if you keep me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because my dear friends, there's no place in this whole world I'd rather be than right here with you fine, fine people. Thank you and God bless you.